The existing fire danger system was adapted after the tragic Victorian fires, where what it was recognised was that the system maxed out. Once you got to like the extreme, which was at the, and I'll try to keep this fairly simple, it was at a certain level, which is, I'll just call 50. Mm. It just basically, from everything from then on, was the same. And what it was said is when it gets to a level of 100, there's exponentially more damage, and those are the fires that cause significant loss of property and or life. So it was said we needed another top-end one, which was put on, obviously catastrophic. Now, what we did was we bolted on to something that was not really designed to do it. So, I mean, I think that we all understand that that system has its limitations, but what we have to do before we move to something is actually get a good scientific basis and not knee-jerk react and change something. Indeed, there is a federal project sponsored by the Attorney Generals and getting financial contribution from the Bushfire CRC and states and territories to actually review this. And that work's been ongoing for more than a year now, and will probably take a couple of years to do it. But what the end product will be something that actually is a lot more relevant than the system we have now. So we all recognise that. So Kevin Tolhurst's comments are not necessarily at odds with what we're saying. I guess what we're saying is we don't want to jump to something else just because it fits the cyclone warning system. We want to actually move to something that works for fire. Now, that may end up being quite similar, but at the moment, the science is not yet there, and scientists from around the nation are actually working on this very problem. Mm. But until we get something that's more comprehensive, we stick with the system we have, because we can't change again in 2009, change again now, and then go to something new when science is out there. So we have to make the system work we have, and obviously then move to a new system when it's really proven to work. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I guess change for its own sake would be just as difficult. The other bit of research around says, from the Bushfire CRC, says that 29% of people faced with extreme bushfire conditions would choose to wait and see before they decide whether to leave or stay. I guess, does that surprise you? That seems like a very large proportion of people who'd hang around in those extreme conditions.
Yeah, look, unfortunately, Linda, that has proven to be our experience, it's something that we try each year. We do advertising campaigns to get people to plan properly, to make these decisions well ahead of time, to have a bushfire survival plan, make sure it's practiced and all the family know what they're going to do if a fire threatens. I guess the difficulty is that we've got to try and cut through everything else that's going on in people's lives, because they're not affected by bushfire every year. Mm. They may only experience a significant bushfire once in their life or once every 20 years. And the problem is that trying to keep their focus on that is really challenging, particularly Everybody's got very busy lives. And so it doesn't surprise me. And the challenge for us is to sort of make people understand that, look, you do this once and then just dust it off every year. Like we say, each year to change your smoke alarm battery, just get that plan out, make sure everybody knows what they're doing. Just do those simple housekeeping things around your home. It's not onerous, but it is a challenge for us. We'll continue to try and get people to change. And look, we've had some evidence of change in behaviour, but it is really incremental change. We're not talking large numbers of people suddenly changing. But interesting, when we've done our advertising campaign, what we've found is that people, there's a large awareness of the messaging, of the need to do it, but actually getting them to actually do the action as opposed to be aware of it is another thing.
Yes. It's a little bit like the kids acknowledging the homework needs to be done, but then getting it to do it is a different story. Yeah. Just finally, after the scenes yesterday in the car park at the Aquatic Centre, I mean, quite surreal, I thought, just seeing what looked like it's a relatively urbanised area, and yet a grass fire, suddenly all of these cars have gone up in flames. How much leaf litter or, gum tree sticks or grass area, how much of it do you need to have a serious danger?
Well, I think what it corresponds to the fire danger. So when you get the types of fire danger we had yesterday, which is high in the extreme scale, it doesn't take a lot of fuel to burn. So you need those, the fuel there, you need the, and then you've got wind and heat and the like. And as the temperature rises and the wind strength increases, that you need less and less fuel. So that's where you see very minimal, fairly bare paddocks, for example, or grassed areas burn quite aggressively. Mm. So it's just one of those things. But I think the reminder of putting it into context for people is they may just have a small reserve of a hectare or more behind them. Now, if a fire starts on the wrong day in the wrong spot, that could cost their home. So even though they may live in suburbia, if they've got that sort of bush area near them, they should have a plan and they should do those simple things. And it could just make the difference between their home being saved and losing their home. And it's important. A home is obviously not just bricks and mortar. A home is, has so much things that can't be replaced. And those people in Port Stephens are going to be faced with that very real situation now. And yep. So that's why people need to really learn these lessons and make sure they plan properly. Yeah.